Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, where world-class doctors are pioneering immunotherapy that's helping to stop cancer in its tracks. And with screenings and advanced treatments across the state, it's cancer care made for Marylanders. Learn more at umms.org/cancer.
How about the Magna Carta? Did you read the Magna Carta for the 13th century take on what property belongs to the crown versus to a private subject?
So we're in these cells, and I remember thinking, wow, the cell is amazing, because everything in Abu Dhabi is totally over the top.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hinken.
Yes, you are. And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week on the podcast, Hot Mess, two stories about summer adventures interrupted by the law.
Also, Hot Mess, the Jessica Hinken story.
Oh,
the Jessica Hinken perimenopause story. Hot Mess.
All right. So this first story is from Catherine Robertson, who shared this at a show that we did at this beautiful space up in Moncton, Maryland called Manor Mill. Take a listen.
I have some notes with me tonight because I'm trying to avoid litigation. So I have to ask a question. Has anyone here ever been canoeing or tubing on the Gunpowder River? I mean, so beautiful, right? Well, I have a question for you. Did you do your legal research before you did that? Did you, for example, search the federal case law dating back 200 plus years on subaqueous property rights? No. Did you read any letters patent dating back to the 17th century from English monarchs? Any of those English monarchs? No. I'm seeing a lot of shaking heads. How about the Magna Carta? Did you read the Magna Carta for the 13th century take on what property belongs to the crown versus to a private subject? No. Well, I didn't either. In the early 90s, when I took a bunch of 15-year-olds from Camp Mount Shenandoah canoeing on the Jackson River in Allegheny County, Virginia. So I went to Camp Mount Shenandoah. I was a kid there. I went for 6 years. I put my camp resume in the program. I had kind of a sad upbringing, and this was my safe space. And I even came back in my early 20s for 6 years to be a counselor, and I was the head of canoeing and the head of the waterfront and assistant program director. Like, I had solved all of the biggest problems in this smallest world. So I was full of all the false confidence of my early 20s. I have to tell you, Liza Black, and that is a fake name. So if I say any other name during this story other than Liza Black, who I'm about to talk a bunch of shit about, then I'm going to trust Aaron and Jessica will edit that out and replace it with, here's a clean one, Liza Black. So she was already on my shit list this summer because we had had to conduct an underwater body search for her. Our swimming area was a 15-foot deep river, the Cow Pasture River, and you couldn't see the bottom. So we had a system of the children telling the adults who's in the water and who's out of the water. It was pretty common at summer camps, the buddy system. So when you go in the water, you put your buddy tag on a certain board, and when you get out of the water and you're exiting the area, the way you tell the adults you're not dead on the bottom of the river is you put your buddy tag on the other side. Well, Liza Black violated the cardinal rule of camp. She was 15 years old, and she was a leader at camp. And we were pretty sure that she had gone up the hill a half a mile away to her cabin, but we weren't 100% sure. So we had to do an underwater body search for this girl, Liza Black. I almost said her real name just then. I was so angry that we were going to have to do this, and I grabbed the nearest little child to me, and I said, go get me Liza Black and make her come to me. And I knew I wouldn't get immediate proof that she wasn't on the bottom of the river because her cabin was so far away. So we had to conduct this underwater body search, and that's actually pretty traumatic. It's legitimately traumatic if you are searching in opaque water that you cannot see. And there's giant fish called muskie who live down there, and there's snakes. There's both venomous and non-venomous snakes in the water. So we were looking for possibly a dead camper. So she does, Liza Black, come down the hill, not apologizing, not even giving excuses. She's looking at me and my trauma, and she's like, you know. And I had to give her the Camp Mount Shenandoah equivalent of a demerit, which I know sounds hilarious, but anyway, I got to punish her. So I say all this because I had to take Liza Black with a bunch of other girls on a special canoeing trip this summer because she was 15 and she was part of the advanced canoeist class, which we called Voyageers at Camp Mount Shenandoah. And so I took a group of, 12 or 13 girls, all white, all pretty privileged. Many of them went to private school, you know, ponytails, freckles, friendship bracelets, T-shirts with their private school names on them. And I was taking them out of our sheltered space, the world that we felt so safe in, over one county over to the Jackson River. We put our canoe in a national forest. It was labeled and everything. We saw, a couple of other canoes getting out. And we start canoeing. And it's a beautiful river. And honestly, the banks on either side are quite like this. I mean, lush with trees, but actually pretty flat. And actually, the water was pretty shallow. And in some places, the riverbed was sticking up a little bit. And mostly, we could canoe around those. But in a few spots, we had to portage. It's called portaging, when you have to get out of the canoe and lift it and carry it over the riverbed or over the ground to get to a deeper place. So we're canoeing down this river, and it's shallow in places, and we start to see empty camp chairs on the banks of the river pointed towards the river as if there's a spectator pastime watching people canoeing down the river. And then we start to see the signs. There are massive signs nailed to trees on both sides facing people who would be on the river, us. And the signs say things like, by crown grant of His Majesty King George. I see someone nodding. And crown grant no trespassing. But the most ominous to me was not no trespassing, but you are trespassing. I am trespassing. So we continue canoeing, but this is a feeling I'm dealing with, and I have all these children in my charge. And then we see a family sitting in some camp chairs. It's about four or five people, and both of the men, the older one and the younger one, they have the same thing across their laps, and they are shotguns. And so I am getting very, very nervous. In contrast to these girls in my charge, this is not a vacation home area. There's no homes here. It's like some tents, like maybe an old Winnebago and people watching people on the river. And Liza Black turns to her friend, almost like a watch this move, and throws out the H word pretty loudly, calling them hillbillies. This is not like when you're queer and you refer to other people as queer. Liza Black, not a hillbilly. So the older man with a shotgun, he actually stands up and he's still holding his gun. And he yells out to me, because I'm clearly the responsible one in the group, "You're trespassing." And I don't want to learn any of the legal history. I don't want to know any of this nuance. I'm just trying to figure out, am I trespassing or will I be trespassing if I go on his land? I'm just trying to figure out, are we going to get shot? And the big problem is coming at us because the riverbed is across the whole river. and we're not going to be able to keep paddling. And I'm having a feeling that what he's saying is the land under the river is his. Yeah. So we have to get stuck on the riverbed. We have no choice. We cannot get out. First of all, it's not like you can just get out. These are like sort of like 10-foot drop-offs. So that's no trespassing, King George. That's no trespassing, King George. This is not passable. So we just have to beach ourselves on the riverbed. And we're stuck. And he shouts, "Do not get out of those boats." And Liza Black, she goes, "What are you going to do? Shoot us?" So her canoe was sort of next to mine, and we're not on water. We're on riverbed right now. So I like take her canoe and I pull it over to me, and I'm like, "If you don't shut up, I will kill you myself." But we're stuck, and he's armed, and he's already told us we're trespassing. So how are we going to get out of this? All we have is canoe paddles. So we become Venetian gondoliers, like an inch at a time. And there's no water. We're just scraping these old town canoes on the riverbed, inch by inch by inch by inch. And I don't know how long it took. 15 minutes? I don't know. It felt like a lifetime. And we do get out of there, and we get back to camp. And I return the igloo bug juice cooler to the kitchen, where some of the local residents who worked in our kitchen were preparing dinner. And I said to them, "So we were threatened with death on the Jackson today? Like, what do you know about that?" And they all looked at each other, "How do you not know about that? Everybody knows about this." "Oh, yeah, that's been going on a couple hundred years." So here's what they told me. This is like a Bleak House Jarndyce and Jarndyce type situation. The same 10 families have been suing about this since the 1700s. They've been suing the U.S. federal government. They've been suing the Virginia state government. Their claims vary from "we own the rocks under the water" to "we own the water too" to "King George granted us this entire piece as long as it's not navigable, so therefore we're just going to close off this part of the river." There have been wins, there have been losses, there have been appeals. There has been a Supreme Court ruling. I know. They are citing crown grants from at least 4 English monarchs dating back to the 1600s. A John, a Charles, and 2 Georges. And what's so ironic to me is the laws that these landowners are citing, they're all from before the Revolutionary War. They're all monarchs saying what we can and cannot do in this country, which is no longer that country. Would you like to know the result of the lawsuits today? The results of the lawsuits today is they're still ongoing. It's not resolved. The latest one is actually about trout fishing guides, because in trying to figure out who was suffering damages in one of these lawsuits, somebody had to come in and assess the brown trout fishing industry, the worth of that industry, and it was deemed to be in the tens of millions of dollars. So now the state of Virginia is suddenly re-energized to not keep this going. Anyway, I will never canoe on the Jackson River again. But you're not me. You might want to. So I do have just 3 tips if you want to go canoeing on the Jackson River. And they are these. Research the case law before you go. Take a paralegal, and it might not hurt to wear a powdered wig.
I mean, there's so much about that story that's hilarious. And but I especially love the beginning where she's just asking the audience, like, their knowledge of, you know, starts
the Magna Carta.
Magna Carta. Yeah. Like, it just, yeah, it's these are the things that can happen when you go into areas that are owned by people in the United States. Things can go wrong very quickly.
That's true.
So let's
take
a break.
We're going to take a quick break before anything goes wrong here, and we will be back with another story.
So this story is also a story about basically being on someone's territory without getting permission, essentially, except now, this does not take place in the United States. So take a listen to Gillian Quinn's tale.
So my story starts in 1986, and I was 15 years old, going to turn 16 around Christmas time. And I'm from a very small town. I was very much a kind of rule follower, played it safe, and I had never really traveled. The only time I'd been out the country was a few years before. I'd done a history trip where we took a bus to Belgium to see the trenches, which were really depressing. So that was my only time outside of Scotland. And I'm from quite far up on the north, on the east coast, but quite far up north, so it's pretty cold. And so that summer, my cousin had come to visit from England, and he'd brought with him his friend, Gorgeous Gordon. So there was Gorgeous Gordon and his sister, Linda, and we all went camping over on the West Coast, and we had really, really good time. We all hit it off. His sister, Gorgeous Gordon's sister, was my age. My cousin and Gorgeous Gordon were 21. So they had just graduated from university, and Gordon was a water engineer. And he had been called out to Abu Dhabi to set up all of the compounds that they were creating for all the big oil businesses that were setting up out there. And Gordon had invited Ian and myself and Linda to go out there for Christmas and New Year. And my mom really didn't want me to go because at that time there was the Gulf War, not the Gulf War that's referred to the Gulf War now, but we knew it as the Gulf War, which was Iran and Iraq had been at war for 4 or 5 years already, 6 years already. And it was getting pretty nasty, and other countries were getting involved, including the support of the U.S. And there was like a bunch of stuff going on. And my mom was like, I really don't think you should be going to the Gulf just now. But I managed to persuade her. My grandma, fortunately, but unfortunately, died. And she left me some money. So I had enough money for my airfare. So I was like, well, I've got my airfare. And I'm going with 21-year-olds who are clearly very responsible. And Linda. And so my mom was like, oh, okay, whatever. And she was raising 3 kids on her own. So she picked her battle. So this was not one she won. So we went out there. We flew out there. First time on an airplane. 11-hour flight out to Abu Dhabi. And Gordon picked us up at the airport and took us back to... So he decided he didn't want to stay in the compound. He wanted to stay downtown Abu Dhabi, which was like... At that time, there was not a lot. There was one skyscraper, but a lot of building going on. It was like really, really busy. And he got a huge apartment, 4-bedroom apartment downtown. We all had our own bedrooms. We were like, this is it. This is like amazing. It was warm. I'd never been in a warm place before. And we went to the beach. Like the water was warm, which just blew my mind. And we did just really ridiculously stupid things. Like we bought Arab outfits and wandered around at night drinking wine and like just really stupid stuff. We like rented jeeps and went out into the desert and to an oasis, like a real oasis that had palm trees and like crystal clear water. And like on Christmas Day, we're like swimming around. And it was just crazy. It was amazing. And Gordon had a boat and he loved to sail. So we would go out sailing every day. And he was like really, he was amazing. He really inspired me. He was really adventurous. He was very handsome and very precocious, very just, he had no fear. So he would be sailing along and there'd be a yacht. He'd be like, hey, let's see if we can have tea on this yacht. I'm like, we can't have tea on this yacht? Like, we don't know these people. But he would just like climb up the ladder and be like, hi, I'm Gordon. Can we have tea? And we would just, so we did all these amazing things. And there was one thing he really wanted to do, which he hadn't had the opportunity to do yet. He wanted to go sailing at night, and it was illegal to go sailing at night because where the marina was, where his boat was, it was just a little sailboat, was right beside the Sheikh's Palace, which is kind of on the point of the bay where it meets the Gulf. So you weren't meant to do it. But he was like, come on, guys, we'll do this. I was like, oh. And Ian, everyone was like, okay, we'll do it. We had like 2 days left. Like, what can go wrong? So we go down there. We drive down. We park like really far away from the marina. And I'm already like, this is just, we shouldn't be doing this. He's like, oh, there's a hole in the fence. I'm like, oh, there's a hole. How did that get there, Gordon? So we climb through the hole in the fence. And we get the boat. And we're kind of getting in the water. And we like look out. And there are these posts. And they look like osprey nests. Like there's a post with a wee platform just above the water. And I'm like, oh, what's that? Like, what's that? And he's like, oh, yes. That's the guards with the guns. Like, what? And so they're like guards on posts with guns. I'm like, first of all, that's really stupid defense system. Like, because what are they going to do? Anyway, so we get in our boat and he's like, it's okay because they have their backs to us. So we'll just sail down the side. We're like, okay, well, we're in it now. So we sail down the side and they don't turn around. But I mean, we weren't being very noisy. And so we sat inside and he's like, okay, like, and we look and it is amazing. Like, I thank him for sending us on this nightmare. It's like, it's beautiful. And the roads are, the way they have the roads out there, like there's like a lamppost every 10 feet and a palm tree and they're lit up like all night. And so there's this grid that goes on just forever out into the desert. And it was really beautiful. And so we're sailing. He's like, okay. It's like midnight. He's like, we need to sail by the Sheikh's Palace because it's really cool and you can't see it. I've never seen it from this side at night. And I know it's lit up. We're like, okay. So we're sailing. And I assumed he was a really good sailor. In hindsight, he didn't know a lot about the wind. So we're sailing and it's pretty quiet in the bay. So we have to sail at full mast because we're not going very, very fast. And we kind of come up to the Sheikh's Palace, and it is really amazing. And we're looking at it like, oh. And we're coming towards the Gulf. And, of course, the winds in the Gulf are quite more significant than the winds in the bay. We're not really thinking about it. And we kind of hit the Gulf, and we capsize, like, really quickly. We capsize. And I don't remember a lot. I actually do remember thinking, oh, my God, this water is so warm. It was like... Because you're taught, like, learning to swim in the North Sea, which I did, you're like, you've got 10 minutes, and you're dead. So we were like, oh, anyway, we fall in. I am seriously panicking. I think, okay, I'm dead. This is it. And we surface. The boat is capsized, but it's floating. And Gordon's like, you know, we gather ourselves, and he's like, we all swam towards the shore, and there was a cove. And so he's like, we get there and we're kind of crawling out of the water, like completely bedraggled. And these two armored vehicles come flying over the dunes with like big spotlights and armed guards. And they jump out and they're shouting at us in Arabic and pointing their flashlights and guns at us. And I'm like, oh my God, my mother was right. And so they pile us in these trucks, and they're kind of like, oh, we're sitting in the open air. We're driving along, and then we just kind of disappear down this tunnel, and we go down underneath the palace. It's like very James Bond. We're like zooming along this tunnel, and we're freezing because it's been so warm out, and their air conditioning is insane. So I'm absolutely freezing. We're soaking wet, and we get to this, like, jail, and we each get put in a cell. And they don't speak any English. So we're in these cells. And I remember thinking, wow, the cell is amazing. Because everything in Abu Dhabi is totally over the top. Like, even the airport. When I arrived at the airport, I was like, what? This is an airport. I mean, it's just insane. And so we're in the cell. I'm in the cell. And it's all white marble. The walls are white marble. I'm thinking, where do you get sheets of white marble? It's crazy. And then there's this little white marble bench all the way around. So I just, like, sit freezing in really inappropriate clothes, really wet, with the guard at the door. And we wait and we wait. And I'm kind of beginning to panic. But then it turned out fine. Gordon, being the smart guy that he is, he knew a little bit of Arabic. The guy knew a little bit of English. He explained the situation, and everything was fine. They thought it was hilarious. And so when we were leaving, they're very much gift givers. that we realized. And so we could see, like, the guards are, like, standing around, and the main guys, like, they're looking for something, like, they have to give us a gift. And there's, like, a pile of Gulf News magazines. So they're, like, very ceremoniously, like, they hand us each a 1986, or it was 1987 by that point because it was after New Year, 1987 Gulf News. And we're like, thank you. And then they, like, take us back to our car, and they're like, no, never do that again. So we're like, okay. So anyway, we had two more days, and we kind of toned it down a little bit, but we had an amazing time. But the two main things I learned from that trip, having gone there as not being a risk taker, I realized Gordon really inspired me to just be like, life's too short. You just have to, like, go for it. And it's okay to break, not that I would break that rule again, but it's okay to break rules and just go for it and have fun. And the second rule I learned was always wear a life jacket if you are within 20 feet of any body of water or on a ferry or snorkeling or anything, which I adhere to. And I suggest you all do too. That's my story.
On a road near Mead Hollow lies a crooked-hooded shape. It slinks along slowly just as night follows day.
I just picture her, like, being so, like, white and unsunned. You know, she talked about, like, never
Scottish.
Been to a beach. Yeah, never been hot. I think she says it, we've never been hot, you know?
Yeah, because it's where she grew up on the North Sea. It's freaking cold. Yeah, so the moment where she's, like, wet and in the jail and everything's, like, marble and cold, yeah, there must have been a part of her that's like, oh, okay, I'm familiar with this. All right, so that's another episode that you have taken in, dear listeners, of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. We want to thank our wonderful producer, Maureen Harvey. We want to thank WYPR for being our podcast platform host. And please check out our website, stoopstorytelling.com, for upcoming events and to hear past stories. We have thousands and thousands.
Literally.
Yep, literally. And take care of yourselves.
Yeah, stay out of trouble, would you?
No hot messes for you, please. And we'll see you next time on The Stoop.
I'll be happier and your courage not fail.